Ladies and gentlemen, Padmini Arhant, representative divine mission, author and presenter, PadminiArhant.com. The interaction between myself and the ruling class begins now. Thank you. Hello, Humphrey. Hello, Padmini. How are you? Fine, thank you. And yourself? Good, thank you. Humphrey, we were talking about womanhood and British monarchy and political system in United States in our previous segment. In this session, I would like to revisit British monarchy once again, not just the British monarchy, I guess the royals in Europe, for they are the descendants of the imperial era and still maintain the imperial legacy and without a shadow of doubt. Imperialism persists in the world, and Africa in particular is the domain, imperial domain. Otherwise you would not see France invasion of West Africa, southern Africa, and of course the Central Africa as well. Not that East Africa is spared, nonetheless, you know, wherever there are abundance resources available in abundance, there you see the imperial presence. And I would even go further and characterize that as dominance, for that is what persists today. So let me talk about the royal families in Europe. As I mentioned, they are the imperial power, and they do have the means to exert enormous influence, as some of them directly or indirectly they are the members of say the Trilateral Commission, which is engaged in foreign policy that is marketed to the people in the world as U.S. foreign policy. In fact, I had talked about it before. The foreign policy is not the U.S. foreign policy, meaning this is not authorized or approved by the electorate or the citizens in the United States. In fact, the foreign policy is the architects, the masterminds, the policy makers of foreign policy are not even they are not part of the U.S. population, in the sense that, you know, they belong to this elite, privileged society, the secret society. And so you have the foreign policy that is drafted, and this is presented by the Trilateral Commission and also the Council on Foreign Relations here in the United States. But then the Council on Foreign Relations has members from Europe and elsewhere as well, but they may not necessarily be in the United States, but nonetheless, you know, they are pulling the strings, their input is accepted in the by the Council of Foreign Relations, that is CFR. In fact, the current presidential nominee or candidate, excuse me, current presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, as the former Secretary of State, even inadvertently mentioned about how Council on Foreign Relations, I quote, is the mothership when it comes to foreign policy, end quote. So that being the case, I would say that the royals in Britain, whether it be of the British monarchy or the European, royal family, are not necessarily engaged in just living their life, and they are conducting their own business and so on. But it's to the contrary. As a matter of fact, Queen Beatrice of Netherlands is a member of the Trilateral Commission as well. So so there are royal presence. There is royal presence in these commissions, organizations that are wielding power and principally engaged in directing United States political system and other nations in terms of the foreign policy. So I would like to ask you, Humphrey, that why is it that the people in Europe, the citizens in Europe, how come they are not waking up to reality? You know, this is 21st century. We are talking about, we are in the information age and space explorations, and even Mars and Moon's invasions are underway. And yet, you know, Europe is still the citizens in Europe are still providing for the royalty, you know, whether it be Britain or Sweden or Belgium and Spain and Denmark and, you know, Netherlands and every part of Europe for, you know, the imperialism from Europe cannot possibly be ignored in history, for that is predominantly responsible for human misery throughout their colonization of different regions in the world. So that being the case, now the citizens in Europe, with this economic recession being so severe, and that is obviously affecting not only the people in Greece, but also the rest of Europe. I'm talking about the ordinary citizens, and then they are the ones who are essentially providing for these members of the royal family, are they not? Whether it be Spain, Britain, and you know, every one of them that I just mentioned. And this means that the royal family in Europe, they are riding on the so-called commoners' back, are they not?
Padmini, you have definitely highlighted the reality in Europe that is exactly what is happening. Royal families, in fact, not just the core family unit, but we're talking about this entire extension of family that the royal family has. And so even the relatives and so on, and anybody remotely affiliated to royalty, they are also being supported by the ordinary people in Europe, whether it be Britain or, you know, any part of Europe, for, you know, their taxes is what supporting the royal families in that part of the world. You know, Humphrey, this is again an irony. You know, I guess the monarchies are full of ironies, from what I can say. British Empire, when they ruled India after the East India Company arrival as traders, and then, of course, using the traitors within the country, they were able to establish the empire, the British Empire. So that being the case, you know, what happened once the British Empire gained momentum in not with the will of the people in India at that time, obviously, you know, whenever there is colonization and establishment of empire, you know, this is not really happening with the people's consent. Nonetheless, there are insiders who are undoubtedly the facilitators for foreigners or foreign rule to establish authority in those nations, and that continues even today. So the British Empire, what did they do? They declared that all kingdoms in India, you know how India has had princely states with maharajas and various kingdoms that had existed. And the first thing they did was they abolished the princely states, and they said there cannot be any maharajas and you know, prince and that kind of a thing, and so they were that was the preliminary step they adopted or they implemented when they became the aggressive authority in India. And and here now we are into the 21st century. The British monarchy still remains in intact, basically forcing the ordinary people in Britain and worldwide to support them. And we are not just talking about, you know, supporting them in a normal or with any minimal contributions. This is the population in Britain and worldwide are supporting the royalty to live their life of opulence, maintaining the palaces, and, you know, they're literally living in the palace and ivory tower when none of them have ever had to even think about their you know, survival or you know, their financial security or anything that any ordinary citizen has to deal with day in and out in their life. So why is it that the citizens in Europe, so why is it in Europe the citizens are still providing for the royals, the royal families, and while the citizens themselves, their own existence has become nearly impossible with the dire economic situation in Europe? Are they not able to decline the mandatory imposition of this support they are expected to extend to these royal families in Europe, right across Europe, whether it be Scandinavia or Britain or anywhere else? This is why I find very strange that Europe is considered modern, democratic, and industrialized world, and in this modern age, supporting royal families through taxpayer dollars and taxpayer funds, how is that even considered? Leaving all the ethics and morals aside, of course, that no longer matters in politics or even in general society these days, with the level of corruption and criminality that has been easily accepted simply because the system is not representative of the people. That is the major problem. So my question to you, Humphrey, is why the people are not able to voice their dissent in this regard. As I just mentioned in our earlier segment, the arrival of new member in the royal family is declared, or there is this public announcement about the arrival of new member in royal family, and that is always accompanied with the media hype, and as always royalty means there is that it's never devoid of pageantry and lot of publicity and so on. And when that happens, what occurs in my mind? I say, now the arrival of new member in the royal family means additional burden on the ordinary people. So ordinary people, you're going to work even harder and longer hours, for you have more members in the royal family to support for generations to come. For this is the reality, is it not, Humphrey? Padmini, what you're saying is true. It is correct for the royal family, as I explained to you, are indeed supported by the people, the ordinary people, more than the wealthiest in society. For the wealthiest are not the ones, as you know, and you have highlighted in your articles time and time again, that the wealthiest are exempt from taxes or a fair share of taxes. And that being the case, the ordinary citizens are indeed burdened whenever the royal family, with all the royal family expenses and so on. Yeah, so that means that I'm not wrong, am I, Humphrey? I'm not wrong in saying that royalty is a major liability to ordinary people in Britain and throughout Europe, or for that matter, wherever the royalty, the royal family exist, and they are dependent on the ordinary citizens, they are the biggest liability, are they not? Yes, you are right. There is no question about it that they are indeed they are not really doing much or anything for that matter to the people or society, except for being concerned about wealth accumulation and of course they want to safeguard their interest as much as possible, so again, Humphrey, let me also bring another issue to focus, which I think is fairly important, and that is the immigration issue in Europe. The influx of immigrants into Europe, and now with EU, the EU being European Union with member states, 28 member states within the Union, and then the EU policy is a free flow of trade and of course the labor force as well, that allows people within EU membership or the ambit are allowed to migrate within Europe in search of job or for any business activities and so on. And then that might be a positive measure in terms of facilitating this free trade and labor exchanges that are fairly critical for any businesses to prosper in the nation or in the region. But then the immigration issue is a hot button issue from what I can see for Europe, for they are of course screaming and kicking, they're kicking and screaming about the immigrants from Africa and Eastern Europe, and also there is, I guess, now from the Middle East as well, overwhelming population are forced to flee their homes because of this relentless warfare in those regions. And so, there you see this transmigration happening, and they are landing in Europe. And as a result, I see that there is, a great deal of political, economic, and even social, hue and cry happening in that continent. Are they not recognizing the root cause of this problem, Humphrey? From what I can see is, why is this even happening in the first place? Let me begin with Africa. African immigrants, whether they are coming from North Africa or West Africa, or if I go into the Caribbeans, if the Caribbean population are arriving in Britain moving elsewhere within Europe, why is this all happening? Do they even care to figure out who is responsible? Imperialism that is so aggressive that they go into Africa and they are only interested in recolonization of every nation in that continent, and of course depleting those nations of their natural resources and leaving the people of every country in Africa, whether it be North Africa, West Africa, Central Africa, you can go to every region in that continent. What is really happening is the resources are being exploited, and those nations are being used for the economic interest of those who represent the 1% in the global population. So 1% representatives, and they are indeed the conglomerate. So they are going into Africa, and for that matter, the same would apply to Middle East. Why do you think that Middle East is eternally a war zone, volatile for Middle Eastern oil, natural gas and resources? But then there is also this fanaticism that exists about, you know, this so-called religious epiphany that has consider that, you know, they are God's chosen people and they have to establish greater Israel, and then you know, connecting from the Euphrates to Nile in Egypt, and so on, and you know, so that is also there. But then even otherwise, what is really happening is that Middle East is region that is earmarked, in my view, that is demarcated for strategic and economic dominance. That would also again apply to you know, Africa, mostly economic interest, and that is why you have this extensive militarization of African continent. What can the people do when imperialism and you know, corporatism representing the conglomerate are you know, invading these nations for economic and strategic interest and depriving these people of their rights, their sovereign right to exist in their homeland, just like the Palestinians in Palestine. They do not even have the right to claim Palestine as their home state. So you see the refugee situation amongst Palestinians scattered not only all over Middle East, they are also forced into Europe. That is why I say, why not resolve this never-ending Israeli-Middle East crisis and, you know, put an end to this saga. So when you have the people from Africa, Middle East and Eastern Europe, I can see that, you know, there is this exodus of population from these regions entering into Europe, and you know, they are everywhere. But what can you do in the sense when your own homeland is invaded and it becomes a rabid war zone? This is not what the people expected for them. And if there is no war, then there is another kind of war that is imposed upon them, and that is the political instability, installing corrupt regimes or political system or governments that are only interested in proliferating corruption. And even if there is any election in Africa, it is invariably, or most of the times, it is contested. And then, you know, the electorate are left with no choice but to just wait and, you know, see when this whole political, the electoral outcome dispute will be, you know, settled amongst the contenders in the election. So, you know, political instability, lack of security due to this civil wars or you know, colonization of their nations, and of course militarization of entire Africa, you know, and to make matters worse, you know, they also have to contend with this continuous natural disasters. But I would not call that natural disaster anymore, for natural disasters are essentially man-made disasters nowadays, with the kind of contamination and pollution of this planet. You know, this is you cannot possibly blame it on nature anymore. You know, there is there's so much abuse, environmental abuse that is going on to no limit. There is no such thing as there are boundaries anymore. You know, this is all again happening as a result of greed, and you know, this is all about profiteering at any expense, even if that means endangering this only planet that you have right now for all species to exist in this planet. And so we are looking at you know, these problems. So Africa, the people in Africa and elsewhere, they have to they are confronted with the environmental problems as well. So when you have famine in Africa, or when you have these other you know, issues like the biological, which I consider it as a biological warfare, the outbreak of deadly viruses like Ebola virus and so on. So what can people do? This is like making their life impossible. You know, survival has become a major challenge for the poor, the weak, vulnerable, and the ones who are slaving, slogging, and toiling day and night in the world, while the 1% on their part, you know, being responsible for most human misery. And I would extend that to the plight of all species on this planet, thanks to them. You know, this is what is happening when you have the 1%, which is the minority, you would think. The minority 1% is what is is responsible, and they are not even prepared to accept any responsibility. And that is the biggest challenge for the remaining 99% right now. So reverting to this immigration issue into Europe, as I just mentioned, where if people from Africa, Eastern Europe and Middle East are thronging to Europe, the citizens in Europe would have to raise this question with their government and ask them that if the immigration problem is becoming a major issue, which I know that also is true to a large extent, but then they cannot blame the people who are coming to their shores. They have the citizens in Europe, rather than exhibiting or expressing any discontent or any kind of anger or frustration towards the immigrants, they would have to take it with their governments. For the in this instance, it would be Brussels, with European Union headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. So Brussels will have to answer to the citizens in Europe, for Brussels is engaged in the problems in Eastern Europe, whether it be Ukraine or Africa, and that goes for Middle East as well. And so and the other thing that I need to point out to the citizens in Europe, Humphrey, is that as I just cited about this, the ordinary citizens in Europe forced to care for or provide for the royalties throughout Europe, and then when it comes to these immigrants who are forced to land in Europe, not by choice, but they have no other option but to see wherever they can escape. They are landing there due to the problems that I just enumerated just now. So let us not forget, while the citizens in Europe are providing for the members of royal family in every part of Europe, who are not just living an ordinary life, let me emphasize that, the members of royal family are living rather an extravagant life at the expense of the ordinary citizens, and they make absolutely no contributions for the welfare of the people or the nation or the region at large. And as there appears to be this acceptance that it is all right if the royal families are all tucked away in their palaces and huge mansions and ivory tower, but then the immigrants who are coming to their shores, simply because their own nations, whether it be Africa or Middle East, have been transformed into war zones by EU and United States and other imperial powers, who are all vying for their own strategic and economic interests. So I would say that, is it not reasonable for citizens in Europe to raise this question with their respective governments and pose this voice their concerns with EU? EU policy has been extremely detrimental in many ways, and I will talk about it as well. But then this is what they need to do. Rather than, you know, having any kind of acrimony towards the people who are coming to Europe for this, they are the unfortunate victims of the imperial policy. And that goes for this, you know, as I mentioned in my previous segment, how this entire political, economic, social, even religion, they do not spare anything. You know, nothing is spared in terms of them exerting control. That being the case, you know, this has to be now taken up with them, not allow them to, you know, to exercise their will, and you know, they have this carte blanche authority worldwide to do whatever they want, and then the people are just fighting among themselves. Or even if there is no you know, obvious, but you can only understand that when you see a stranger or another foreign national in your country, and then you don't have a job, whereas that person is willing to work for less, and that person takes away the job, then, you know, there is going to be this immediate anger, or there will also be this, you know, there is going to be this discrimination, and so on. So and that this is how you see discord within society, that okay, all these immigrants are all, you know, coming and taking away our jobs, and that is why we are suffering, and so on. But instead, the locals in every nation in Europe, they need to, you know, pose this question with their government, and they need to ask them, what exactly are you doing with our tax dollars? How are you spending our tax money? And why are we in these people's nations, whether it be in Africa or Middle East or elsewhere, rather than investing our money in our lives? And and so that, you know, we have financial, that is economic security, and we can look forward to a better future for us and our, you know, generations in the immediate and long term. So this is what they need to do, and there is no point in thinking that, well, these immigrants are all coming here, whether they are coming from Eastern Europe, Romania and Hungary and Bulgaria and of course Ukraine, with Ukraine being a big mess now, and so on. So who is responsible? Who has created all these problems? You know, whenever there is going to be this enormous dispute about how foreign nationals are, you know, becoming the threats for the locals, and they are taking away their, you know, economic opportunity from them. As I just mentioned, you know, the citizens in Europe, I don't think, you know, they can claim to be ignorant, you know, especially in this information age. They must be quite aware of what exactly is going on in different parts of the world, whether it be Africa, Middle East, Eastern Europe, or elsewhere, you know, with all this warfare and meddling and overthrow of governments and political instability. Whenever there is political instability, you know, how can any economy even function? You know, with political instability, economy just basically gets neglected. How can there possibly be any economic activity with everything that is going on, whether it be in Ukraine or you know, in the Middle East, and that goes for Africa and Latin America, and now it has spread into Asia, this Asia Pacific as well. So this is what I think the people have to reflect on and see that, you know, what is causing these problems that has now arrived at their doorstep. Who is responsible, and whom should they hold accountable? And this is high time that, you know, they have to come together as people, as citizens, and, you know, and demand a solution from the problem makers. And of course, you have to ask them to refrain from such activities, for they are the ones who are creating these economic, political mayhem in different parts of the world. Padmini, I think you have adequately covered the existing economic woes in Europe, the cause, and the action or inaction that is largely responsible for you know, the people to experience this extreme economic crisis in Europe. So yes, to a large extent, I think that, you know, the refugee problem is a big problem for Europe, but then Europe is responsible, beginning with the imperial era that persists until today. They need to understand that this is 21st century, new millennium. They need to renounce the imperial goals and recognize the fact that you know, we are living in not unipolar world. This is a multipolar world. And you know, this all this ambition for supremacy and empire, resurrection of empires, has to be abandoned, for this is not really going to make the them or the world make any progress. Humphrey, this is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, if you, as long as the supremacy and in global dominance aspirations continues, it would be impossible for people to even you know, maintain a normal, ordinary life. This is why I say that the gap between the haves and have-nots is only widening by the hour. Now, when you see the review statistics, whether it be the developed or developing economies, you know, the people who are poor are only getting poorer. And in industrialized nations, for that matter, the middle class is essentially dwindling. They are almost on the brink of disappearance. You know, so you have middle income, middle class being slipped into, or they are now descending towards the lower income category. And then you have the rich, the wealthiest are becoming so wealthy that they really do not know what to do with all the you know, the assets and the material possessions that they have. That again, the problem, Humphrey, is that they do not know the meaning of contentment. If they were only to realize that there is something called contentment, unless and until, you know, they rein in on their greed and pause for the moment and reflect on their actions. For, you know, overwhelming greed eventually is going to be so unsustainable for them that that is what is already contributing to this great deal of volatility and insecurity within their circle, you know, even amongst the wealthiest and all that. Do you think that they have a peace of mind that they have so much wealth and they need not worry about you know, for generations to come? No, they are constantly engaged in more wealth amassment at any cost. So in a way, I feel that, you know, they are in this marathon race, and they just kind of can, you know, they are on the run, and you know, going to every part of this planet looking for treasures. They are, you know, this perennial treasure hunt is what is driving them out of control. It's driving them crazy. They are saying, well, you know, there is this incredible resources in this part of Africa. Then we have found here in Latin America, or we have some here in the United States. The United States is, you know, has discovered this in immense oil and natural gas, and then, you know, elsewhere in the Middle East, you know, we are looking for more oil reserves and so on. And, you know, they are digging the ocean, drilling the ocean. They are, you know, removing the mountain tops with the dynamites for mining, and so basically, you know, the activities that you see around the planet by those who are so overwhelmed with greed that they simply cannot have enough. And where this is all going to lead, all that I can say is that, you know, anything that is out of control, needless to say what the outcome might be. You know, when you're going on when you are driving a car and you say that there is no speed limit, and then you hit the gas pedal and you just, you know, keep going, what is that going to come? You know, what is going to happen as a result? You know, and this is what is happening. There is no such thing as a limit. There are there is no restriction in containing their goals in terms of earth excoriation for resources. And I can understand, you know, even though there is no justification to deprive other species other than humans to, you know, to face the this existential threat of their survival. I'm talking about how many species are now in the animal kingdom has become or facing, they are becoming endangered species. So this extensive activities on the planet is now endangering life on planet. So what is going to happen to the ecosystem? Eventually it's going to come back and make even the inhabitation for humans impossible. And this is something that obviously not taken into account seriously by the offenders. I mean the polluters, those who, you know, do not care about the extent of contamination and so on. So that of course is the environmental woes that I have stepped into right now. But all that I can say in terms of Europe immigration policy and immigration issue is that the citizens in Europe need to address or have their governments address this issue, not by, you know, isolating the immigrants or the asylum seekers on their shores and, you know, treating them poorly and not, you know, being hospitable to them. For after all, you know, who would like to leave their homeland if only the homeland were to be more prospective and conducive for human population to exist in their home state. And this is what is happening in Africa or Middle East, that is pushing all these people or prompting these people to leave their villages, towns, and, you know, country, and you know, go overseas. And of course, you know, there they are obviously they have to deal with so many challenges. First of all, you know, they are not citizens of that country, and so, you know, they cannot find a job, or they are not able to find the survival means in any manner, and some of them are even forced into you know, begging and so on, and which I think is really sad. And and of course this is something that should be redressed by those in the position of power and authority, and of course the people in Europe would have to now realize that their tax dollars, their hard-earned tax funds should not be going to care for the wealthiest, whether it be the royal families in their palaces and mansions, or you know, the governments as the proxies for the conglomerate engagement in warfare, whether it be in Eastern Europe like Ukraine, or Middle East, Syria, and so on. And then you have Africa. Africa is never relieved from colonization by the imperial powers. So this is what the people in Europe would have to do for their own, you know, this is to protect their own interest, you know. So I would say that if you have any issue with the asylum seekers and immigrants arriving on your shores in Europe, I would urge the citizens in Europe take up that matter with their respective governments and ask their governments not to meddle in these people's nations in Africa and elsewhere. Then you would not have to deal with the arrival of these immigrants on your shores. They would be more than happy to live in their respective countries in Africa and elsewhere, and work in building their nation. So this is what needs to be understood. Humphrey, I'm going to pause at this moment, and we will resume our conversation about other issues. And in the meantime, I would like to thank you and the listeners. This is Padmini Arhant. I would like to let the listeners know that I will be back with my thoughts on many other issues concerning humanity. Until then, thank you. Bye.